These are eggs. Quick whisk, no risk, protein punch, power lunch, bake for dinner, easy winner, fed the lot, hit the spot, eggs. And why pick up more eggs when you're shopping? Because there are more ways to enjoy them. Like bacon and mushroom fried rice with poached eggs, delicious sautéed potatoes with spinach and eggs, or everyone's favourite, a simple cheese omelette for lunch. So versatile, so nourishing. And always choose eggs with a Board Bia quality mark for the highest standards verified at every stage. Eggs, crack on.
On this week's Big Tech Show, how will the latest developments in artificial intelligence affect your life? Will you get new powerful personal assistants? Are you in danger of something terrible happening? We explain what's going on.
Just a couple of weeks ago, Anthropic, which is OpenAI competitor, their startup lab, actually founded by former OpenAI employees, they actually eclipsed GPT-4 only just a couple of weeks ago with their latest model, and the internet went crazy. This is just better than GPT-4 at everything. So OpenAI had to respond to that.
The Big Tech Show, available on all podcast platforms.
This week on Crime World.
There was a Republican police from 1920. I mean, the IRA was effectively trying to run an underground government. And actually, there was a crime wave, 1919, 1920. There's a wave of bank robberies, post office robberies, robberies of individuals, robberies of pubs in Dublin and in rural areas as well. So the IRA tried to actually clamp down on that. They, on occasion, solving bank robberies and giving the money back to the banks. Now,
I'm Nicola Tallant, and you can listen to my podcast, Crime World, wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an Irish Independent podcast.
Hello and welcome to The Left Wing. Well, Andy Farrell has named his team to play Wales here at the Aviva Stadium in the Six Nations on Saturday. It's largely back to the team that started the win over France at the start of the month, except for one change. Ciarán Foley has been named at full-back in the absence of the injured Hugo Keenan, and the uncapped Ollie Yeager is on the bench. We're also back to a 6-2 bench split. Rory O'Connor and Keen Tracy are here with me, Sinead Kazan. What do you make of that team, lads?
Yeah, it's probably affording Wales a respect they potentially don't deserve. I mean, I think Andy Farrell could have shaken things up a little bit as well and maybe retained some of the players who did well against Italy, but possibly the spectre of Warren Gatland coming over the hills, possibly the fact that he wants to get some rhythm into this team ahead of the trip to Twickenham in 2 weeks' time. He's gone with the strongest possible team that was available to him, and you can debate whether Ciarán Foley is the right man for 15, but other than that, this team has, you know, who went to Marseille and performed so well, have earned the right to go again for a big game at home, and having shaken things up against Italy and made those changes, he now kind of goes back to that 6-2 split. So he rewards a lot of the players who did well in the Italy game by a place on the bench, and I don't think it will be received particularly well in Wales. I'd say that's the kind of team that you would look at and gulp a little bit, because it's formidable. And then he just changes things up slightly by putting Yeager on the bench. You know, six games into his Munster career, having gone and gotten them back from New Zealand. You know, that was it was a shrewd piece of business by the IRFU and Munster. And I think he's impressed a lot of people in Ireland since he came in over in Portugal. And now he gets his cap, he gets his chance to back up Tadhg Furlong. And like, he's a debutant, but he's a 28-year-old with his five Super Rugby titles under his belt. So you're not really taking a chance on this fella. He has a lot going for him already. So it's a powerful big bench backing up a powerful big team. And I think it's a matter of how much Ireland win by on Saturday.
Yeah, Rory just said there you could debate about the Ciarán Foley selection at fullback. He's played six times for Leinster this season. I think it comes with a lot of logic, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Six of his nine starts for Leinster this season have come at fullback. He's the most experienced fullback left in the squad, at least at provincial level. I know he only came on for a minute or 2 minutes in Marseille, but he did come on at fullback, Hugo Keenan. I think a lot of people even forget that he did come on, and Calvin Nash went off injured, and it was Hugo Keenan who went to the right wing. So I think it makes a lot of sense. I think if Jimmy O'Brien and Mac Hansen would have been fit, you might have seen maybe a little bit of a shuffle there. But look, Ciarán Foley, we speak about Ciarán Foley's versatility quite a lot in terms of it, you know, being a hindrance. I mean, I was over in New Zealand in 22, and he told us before the second Maori game he didn't want to be a jack of all trades. Now we're a couple of years on, and I would say he still is a jack of all trades. He wants to be playing 10. Leinster clearly think that the two Byrne brothers are ahead of him in the pecking order. Sam Prendergast is coming now, so his versatility actually works in his favour this weekend. ironically, it didn't for that Italy game, because, like, harshly enough, I thought he got nudged out of the squad when he, like I mentioned, he was included for Marseille. So look, it's a big opportunity for him. I'm really excited to see how he goes and what it does for Ireland's attack, because I think one of the big improvements in Hugo Keenan's game, I think, over the last couple of years has been his ability to step up as first and second receiver. He's far more comfortable doing that now, but Frawley as a natural 10, it's going to come even more natural for him. So I think it opens huge possibilities for this Ireland attack. I'd be surprised if they don't play two-sided with Jack Crowley, Frawley. Like, that's going to keep the Welsh defence totally on its toes in terms of what Ireland are going to throw at them. So I'm excited to see what he does. I know he doesn't have maybe the pace that Hugo Keenan has, but I think, you know, he's a
not
good...
Not many do.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Like, in his...
Or the fitness.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Hugo Keenan's one of the fittest people, definitely in the Ireland squad, probably along with James at Gibson Park. But look, Hugo Keenan is such a special talent, and I don't know, whatever. Like, it's been tricky trying to report on Hugo Keenan's injury over the last couple of weeks. I don't know if you'd agree, Rod, that, you know, we went to the press conference on Tuesday and you have an Ireland coach saying that, oh, they're going to give him every opportunity, whereas the information that we would have had for the last couple of weeks was that Hugo Keenan is possibly facing a few weeks out, let alone playing this week. So just in case any listeners are wondering, I mean, we can only report what, you know, we're being told by the IRFU, but anyone who has been reading, I think, will have seen that we did flag last week that
Ringrose is the same. So they've kept Ringrose. Yeah. Like, I heard Ringrose was going to miss the first two games and be a doubt for the third game, and that, so it's proved he's back training. They expect him to be back for England. But yeah, they've taken a policy this year, I don't know why, of kind of just keeping everyone in the camp and issuing very... Well, they don't issue injury updates often, and when they do, they didn't even mention Hugo Keenan in their injury update during the week, which I think is a disservice to fans. We've had a fairly firm line on both of those players so far. You know, Doris had a knock this week, I think it was to his calf, Keane. And obviously that stressed you out because you were down in Ballinagh yesterday preparing a big feature on him for Saturday. But it's... like, you know, I think personally just think that there should be more transparency around this stuff, and it should be clearer as to, you know, I understand why you might keep your cards up your sleeves a little bit. On Frawley, like, I don't think he's the most experienced fullback in the squad. I mean, Jordan Larmour started the World Cup pool game against Scotland. Now, it was a different cycle and everything like that, but he did play very well, and him and Stockdale have started against for Ireland in that position under Andy Farrell, but it's just a sign of how far both of those players have
most recent experience, he's six of his nine starts this season, is my point, I should clarify.
Yeah, no, absolutely, but I do think that you're right that it's a logical selection, because those players, I mean, Stockdale's just not playing well, and he's just a symptom of what's gone on in Ulster the last couple of years, and Larmour, you know, for a player who was, you know, arguably should have kept his place after that game in 2019 when he was really good against Scotland in really tough conditions under the high ball, has lost his way in that department. And obviously they just can't really trust him to be that player anymore at fullback. And that's really, like, difficult for them. The other option, I guess, would have been to play Harry Byrne on Jack Crowley, which finished really well last time. And that double pivot really, really worked for them in those last 10 minutes. But why would you move Jack Crowley at this?
Yeah.
So Farrell, like, I think Farrell was a bit kind of not critical, but he wasn't overly happy with how Crowley went. If I'm thinking off the top of my head, in his press conference, he kind of said that he went fullback, he lost his way a little bit. So I'd be very much on Sinead's kind of page.
No, I agree. Yeah.
Like, you just have to play Jack Crowley as a 10. Of course, it's an option, but you've mentioned Larmour and Stockdale there. Like, Stockdale had a horror show in the Osprey against the Ospreys on Sunday, and all the things that we've been talking about is concentration. Just like, you just can't. Like, look, if we're being honest, he's lucky to be in the squad, in my opinion.
Like, the next best fullbacks in Ireland are both at Munster. So, like, if you're looking for like for Hugo Keenan, you're looking at Simon Zebo, who I think is still struggling with an injury, and Mike Haley, who's just returned from injury, and I think Mike Haley, had he not been injured, would have really justifiable claims for that 15 jersey, but he's missed the whole season. He's only just back. So he is the next like-for-like replacement. So you're kind of, it's a little bit of a square peg in a round hole, and I'm not convinced that Frawley has the pace to play international level at fullback.
Is that where Juan Gatland might be licking his lips?
Well, he will be, but does he have the tools? Like, does Sam Costello have the tools to unlock that back three? I'm not sure. We don't know enough about this Wales team yet to say that they do. Like, they haven't been... Like, they're getting, you know, fairly easy ride, but, like, you know, they're a poor team, poor young team developing. They've lost two games. They've only won one Six Nations game under Warren Gatland since he's come back, and that was against Italy. So, like, yes, they can probe and they can ask questions of Kieran Frawley, but they have to kind of get to him first. They have to get the ball off Ireland first. Like, they have Tommy Rafael, who's probably, you know, arguably the best seven in the tournament. But he can't do it on his own. I think Ireland will target him. So yes, it's a potential weakness. And the caveat to that is that Ireland have always, under Andy Farrell, certainly for the last 2 years, been able to throw players in and it's always worked. You know, Calvin Nash in Marseille, I had my doubts about him as an international winger. Well, I eat my words now. You know, Jack Crowdy's just come in and stepped up automatically, you know, like seamlessly. Joe McCarthy, you know, anyone he's tried so far has thrived. And you'd imagine the work that they've done in training the last couple of weeks. They've been testing Kieran Frawley in that regard.
That's the key, isn't it? Frawley, okay, it's a big test for him, the biggest test of his career, but he's not being thrown in as such because he's been part of the squad for the last couple of years. I mentioned there he was in New Zealand, albeit he was playing 10 in those two Maori games, but I'm sure he was running plenty at fullback as well just to cover all bases. So I think that's one of the beauties. You're so right to highlight it, Rod, in Farrell's selection is that all these guys who he throws in have been in the system. Calvin Nash, he was on the Emerging Ireland Tour to South Africa. Okay, it wasn't with the senior players, but it was with the senior coaches. So they know the levels that these players can hit before they throw them into the deep. And that doesn't happen by accident.
So we know, back to the 6-2 split, as we mentioned, Conor Murray's on that bench. Stuart McCloskey's on that bench as well. Peter Mahoney's back as captain. Our colleague, Murray Kinsella, had the story in the 42 today that it looks like Munster are about to offer Peter O'Mahony and Conor Murray a new contract.
The story is that the contracts have been offered. And like, I think as soon as Peter O'Mahony became Ireland captain, this was inevitable, certainly in his regard. I think Murray's a more complicated picture because he doesn't start for Munster. He's arguably more important to Ireland than he is to Munster right now. You know, he obviously is a very senior player down there, you know, and one of their all-time greats in his position, if not their all-time great as number nine, but he isn't the starting number nine. And his influence has waned. Craig Casey's kind of taken the shirt off him and plays longer and longer each game. But like O'Mahony still sets the agenda down in Munster. He's still the, you know, when he came back over in Toulon that time, he was so influential. And Tadhg Beirne spoke afterwards that even though he was captain, he delegated or he felt that O'Mahony eased the burden of leadership on his shoulders. And as long as Peter O'Mahony is able to tug out and play to his best, he'll still be a pivotal figure for Munster. And he kind of resigned the captaincy. You know, we understand, I think, that, you know, he basically stepped down as captain after the contract debacle.
Does he get the captaincy back if he signs a new contract?
I doubt it. I think he's pretty happy enough now. Yeah, you know, yeah. He's kind of, that maybe that's a weight off his shoulder. He did it for a long time, but I think he was disrespected by the way it all played out. And there's been a bit of, but I think as soon as Farrell appointed him captain, he would have put it in the works. I think this, the line in the piece, that this, you know, I think the RFU will top up the salaries, which, you know, they're not centrally contracted, but they're not, you know, it's not all on Munster
smart,
either,
isn't it? That's smart business. They did the same for Simon Zeebo when he came back. It makes sense for
Jaeger as well, I think.
But why wasn't it done earlier? Like, why has it been let go till February?
I don't know. I presume Munster were trying to play hardball in terms of trying to keep, because they're obviously going to have to absorb the two players' salaries. And okay, they're in the autumn of their career, but they're still going to be commanding significant chunk of the wage bill. So look, I think it's a win-win situation for everyone. The idea that Peter O'Mahony would have been left, you know, leave Munster at the end of the season, having just been named Munster captain, I think would have probably caused riots down in Munster and Cork. It just didn't make any sense. I agree with Murray, but I still think he shows his value time and time again for Ireland and for Munster. I know Rountree obviously prefers Craig Casey at the moment, but that's not the case for
Ireland. He's going to be a very expensive substitute, and that's, I think, where Munster are struggling a little bit. You know, I've heard a rumour and I can't corroborate it, but, like, you know, that maybe an overseas signing might fall through as a result of this, because the burden of pay has come onto them, so they can't afford to go to the market, because things are tight in Munster and Ulster particularly at the moment. And they have been a Connacht, in fairness, who have been probably cutting their cloth better than any other Irish province over the last couple of years. So it is, you know, Joey Carberry has been a very expensive luxury for Munster for the last couple of years, because he's no longer an Ireland player, he's no longer the starting 10, and Murray, you know, would be on a very good salary, you would think, given his status in the game as a Lion. But he spoke, you know, you were talking to him on Tuesday about how he wants to go on and emulate Johnny Sexton. So I suppose it's up to him to become a starter again.
Yeah. And that's not beyond the realms of possibility. I know he's had a couple of injuries over the years, but he could definitely play at least 38. Excuse me, but I think it's the experience that they both bring as well. We've seen it throughout this season for Munster when Peter O'Mahony wasn't there. There was a real lack of leadership, particularly over away in Exeter, and those big leads that they were coughing up in the second half. So I think it was imperative that Munster found a way to keep them. And I think the IRFU, if that is the case, as was reported, topping up their salaries, I think makes a lot of sense for everyone. It's a win-win.
And Andy Farrell, you know, he's a very good selector, and he values the input of these players, and he values the experience of these players. And he has backed Conor Murray, and Conor Murray has repaid his faith in a load of games coming off the bench. He's a very calming presence coming into those games. Often Ireland are leading. They need it. He's a good defender. He's a good decision maker. He's a good kicker. His passing's very good. He's still a very, very good scrum half. He might not be the player he was in, you know, his glory days around 2016, when I think I gave him 10 out of 10 against the All Blacks in Chicago. He was exceptional that day. But he's still a big contributor to this whole squad, and can be for Munster. I mean, they play a faster game now. Maybe he has to adapt to that. But really, you couldn't say that any of the scrum halves coming through are putting enough pressure on him. Even Casey, I don't think, grabbed this chance really against Italy. There's a reason Murray's been picked on the bench, and he covers 10. So if you're going to go 6-2, he's a better option.
10 out of 10. Jeez, that is
wonderful.
Well, I was just thinking, like, you're like the Lekeep ratings where you give out 2s and 3s.
I've been taking off at this stage.
Yeah, jeez, a 10 out of 10. Conor Murray must have that pinned up in his wall, I'd say.
Anything else from the team selection before we...
I think it's worth mentioning that Stuart McCloskey is covering on the bench, because as Rudd was saying...
He did well against Italy.
He did excellent, and Gary Ringrose, as we've seen and heard, is back fully fit now. But what a message that sends out to Stuart McCloskey and the rest of the squad by Andy Farrell. Look, I think Robbie Henshaw has been outstanding in the first two games. He was excellent for Leinster and Welford Road just before the Six Nations as well. But I still think Guy Ringrose is Ireland's best 13, and that's just no slight on Robbie Henshaw whatsoever. But I think this is a smart... Like, we touch on this a lot about how clever Farrell is in terms of like his emotional intelligence by reading the dressing room and knowing which buttons to press. And I think this is a great message to send out.
Imagine the confidence it just gives him as well.
Absolutely. And I wouldn't be surprised if Ringrose comes into the mix for Twickenham.
He has trained and he's just not quite ready. But at the same time, I think McCloskey earned that spot. The only thing he doesn't give you is coverage. So Frawley can go into the centre. That's not needed because you got McCloskey. Frawley's 10 and 15. I presume Gibson Park will go on to the wing if they need
him. That's the one caveat in this particular 6-2, that if one of the wingers gets injured, you're in a bit of bother then.
But in the Scotland game at the World Cup, Gibson Park played wonderfully on the wing. Mm. So, and you know, he has the capacity to do it. Now, you don't want him doing it for an hour. Like, you know, if one of the wingers goes down early, then you might be...
What if Frawley goes down early? Crowley go back.
Well, no, Frawley, who'd be a 10? Yeah. Murray a 10?
Yeah, they could do that.
Robbie Henshaw?
You could put... Yeah.
For the first time since 2019, which is the last time Ireland lost in front of a crowd at the Aviva Stadium. So
yeah,
that's a conundrum, man. Like, that is, Joe Schmidt would never have picked this particular bench, because Joe used to always work from what could go wrong. And like, Felix Jones
overthought it, you could say it was
certainly safety first.
Yeah.
And I mean, Felix Jones got a lot of bench appearances because he covered a lot of positions, and also he was a left footed kicker in the backfield. And Joe went into a real level of detail about why he picked him ahead of some other players. So Farrell is going more about like, what can I bring off the bench? I mean, it's a meaty bench. It's probably the biggest bench Ireland have ever picked.
What are Wales thinking with that bench?
Yeah, absolutely. But it's a lot stronger than the Welsh bench. That's for sure. And if they're in trouble after an hour, or even if they're in the balance, it's such a weapon to be able to send on Jack Owen and Ryan Baird and James Ryan. I mean, all three were very good against Italy as well, as was McCloskey. So it's, you know, it's about he's thinking, what can this bench bring? Whereas other coaches will think, you know, the risks, and we have seen the risk out here. Toulouse a couple of years ago, they lost a centre and Dupont ended up playing out of position and they were really weakened by it, so it can go wrong, and that is the risk you always take with 6-2, but the upside is so clear.
I'm surprised they went 6-2 for this particular game. I can understand the logic.
Do you think it's because they didn't need to?
Yeah, I don't think they needed to. I think you could have had a Jordan Larmour or whatever on the bench and avoided the potential scenarios that we're talking about. But I think it speaks to probably the mindset and the philosophy that this Ireland team are just going to look to batter Wales. I think the big difference between them is going to be up front, and I think we're going to see that from the start. And then when he rolls on the players that Rudd is talking about, that's where you're going to, I think they could pull away.
Plays to Ireland's strengths as a squad though now, because they don't, like, really, as you started talking about McCloskey at 23, I was trying to think who really deserves to be there ahead of him. And if Ringrose isn't fit, he couldn't make the case for Larmour or Stockdale.
It was
really
harsh,
you know?
Larmour got on, I felt, at outside centre against Italy. I think he would have preferred to have gotten a shot on the wing, where realistically that's where
he's
going.
But if you weigh him up against Ryan Baird, which is probably the decision, like, what Baird brings off the bench is so key. And also O'Mahony has some sort of an injury the last couple of weeks that we don't know about. So he might come off after an hour. You're bringing on Baird's line out prowess, his carrying, his tackling. He's been really good in the two games so far. Conan's been excellent. James Ryan is still pissed off going into this game. I'd say he's just perennially annoyed at the moment, and it's coming out in his performances because he was good against Italy as well. So I think it's really leaning into where Ireland are at their strongest at the moment, and that's in the back five of the scrum.
Okay, well, you put yourselves in Warren Gatland's shoes. So he's coming here, they haven't won a Six Nations game here since 2012. Ireland have won 38 of the last 40 test matches at home. Obviously England 2019, France in 2021, they've won here. So they're on a run of 17 consecutive test wins. How is Warren Gatland framing this game? What is he saying to them?
To be the party poopers, I presume, you know, to end Ireland's unbeaten run, to stop them winning a potential Grand Slam. I was writing about this earlier this week. If you want to take the glass half full approach when it comes to Wales, okay, they've lost their opening two games, but it's been by a margin of 3 points. There has been flashes of positivity in there, apart from the first half, obviously, against Scotland in round one. So look, he's back in a new crop of players. You've got Cameron Winnett at fullback. Daffy Jenkins is obviously the captain. Costello coming back in at 10. Rudd mentioned Tommy Rafael. Okay, he's not the youngest. So there has been little bits of positivity here and there, but I mean, he's going to have to give some rousing team speech, I think, for his players to realistically believe that they can beat this Ireland team. Like you mentioned, Sinead, they've become so difficult to beat here at the Aviva Stadium. So when they look at the starting team, the quality that's going to be rolled off the bench, I mean, we're going to find out shortly if Finlay Beelam is injured. I would probably assume that he is, because I thought he was very good against Italy as well. I couldn't see him being dropped from the 23. But yeah, like, it's a massive, massive tall order for Wales to upset the odds here. It's hard to see it happening though, isn't it?
Yeah, I think tactically it's going to be about the breakdown. And, you know, I heard James Tracy say during the week that Wales' opponents have had the slowest breakdown in this tournament, whereas Ireland had the quickest ball, and Ireland pay off lightning quick ball all the time. So if you're going to try and negate what Ireland do, you know, South Africa are the template, you know, and we'll see that probably in 2 weeks' time when Felix Jones, coach defence, goes after Ireland. But they have, even though Ireland have won their two games against South Africa, they've probably done the best job at shutting Ireland down. So Rafael is key. I think he'll go after Ireland's ball, but I do expect Ireland to almost treat him the way Leinster treated Tyburn when he was playing for Scarlets against them a couple of years ago, when he was the best player in the Scarlet setup, but he was the biggest threat over the ball, and they just blitzed him. They'll try and make him tackle.
Leinster did that to Rafael a couple of weeks ago at Welford Road. I mean, he did get one or two poaches, if memory serves, but they went after him big time because they know the threat that he has.
I think they'll try and keep the ball on the pitch. Mm-hmm. I think they'll try and not give away any penalties, which is hard against Ireland, because Ireland keep the ball through a lot of phases and force you to try and, you know, get off the ground, and if you stray offside, they'll put you into the corner. But Gatland's team have been the most disciplined in the tournament so far, so there is if you don't give Ireland lineouts, can they score off other phases? We don't know yet, because really they've been given a lot of lineouts in their two games so far, and it has to be said that Italy and France weren't very good against Ireland in the two games, so we have to apply some kind of breaks to what Ireland can do. But really, with this team, with this halfback pairing, with this the kind of callowness of that pack, can you see them living with Ireland physically across 80 minutes? Even if they deny Ireland the access that we're talking about, Ireland can still play through them. Ireland can still vary the way they play. I think Ireland have better tactical kickers. I think Frawley, one strength he'll bring is to be able to pop up a 15, both as a playmaker but also as a tactical kicker. I think Ireland just have way too many strengths for Wales to counter, even though Wales will come with a plan, and Gatland is good at coming up with a plan, but last year they just blitzed Wales and it was over.
The scrum will be interesting as well, because I think previously Gatland would have had the cattle to go after this Irish scrum, in particular Andrew Porter, but when you look at the front row that he's picked there, it's hard to see it happening, isn't it?
Okay. Yeah,
absolutely.
Right, well, let's just get a few of the thoughts of Andy Farrell from today's press conference.
Obviously, we had a few injuries last time, and there's a few injuries this time round as well. Those guys who were not fit to play against Italy have used their time well and fit them round to go, so that freshens things up a little bit. And having said that, I think it's a good side, you know. It's one that we've excited to see take the field on Saturday.
Some of the new faces, some of them are new, but Frawley coming in at fullback and Ollie Yeager on the bench. Can you tell us about those players, what you see in them, and why you've chosen them?
Well, it's I think first and foremost, it's always a pleasure to give somebody their debut, but I think this is a special one because it's a special story in Ollie. In fact, I've had a couple of conversations with him over the years. When we was over in New Zealand, I met him about his plans, etc. And where that sat. But he was content enough because he was building a really nice life for himself over there and doing unbelievably well for the Crusaders. But he showed his ambition to come back to Ireland and make a claim for a spot in playing for his country. So we've had him earmarked for a while, but watching him start his career in Ireland at Munster and how that's gone, and then giving him the opportunity to come to Portugal with us, and he's had a few more weeks since then in the squad. We've been nothing but impressed. You know, he's a big man, very low maintenance, a proper man's man, you know. The Tash says it all, doesn't it? And he's very knowledgeable, well coached, and for a big man, he gets around the field and got a good feel. So he deserves his chance, I thought, coming into camp and then transferring that to his performance against the Scarlets, where he'd not actually played for quite some time, actually, was pretty impressive. So we're excited for him to show what he's got on Saturday. And then for Froles, his first Six Nations start, exciting for him. You know, he's always been in and around the squad and pushing, and you know, the versatility that Froles has got has always probably earmarked him for a bench spot, etc. But he's always been waiting for this chance. Hugo doesn't get injured too much, does he? Look, his skill set is fantastic. And I'm sure that it's a big week for him, you know, so there'll be a test of his temperament, but he's playing in a good side. I'm sure that he'll take his chance.
Okay, before we move on to the other games this weekend, just a quick word on the Dan McFarlane story from yesterday that Brendan Fanning broke, and it was confirmed by Ulster then later yesterday. Obviously, Richie Murphy will take up the role till the end of the season after the under-20s. Sum up what, you know, McFarlane's time, and who's the man to take it on in a permanent role, do you think?
Good question. I know Brendan has floated the name Ian Foster, and I think that would be an ambitious appointment if they could afford to go and get
That'd
him.
That'd be amazing.
Yeah. Like, I mean, but like, that's the calibre, I think, of figure that you're really looking at now. You know, I think Ulster, you know, Stuart McCluskey's on the bench tomorrow. They didn't have any players for the first time in the history of Irish rugby. They had no one in the matchday squad for an international in Marseille. They're really not pulling their weight as an organisation, and you know, it is supposed to be some of the RFU and Irish Rugby Association, a team of us, some of our parts, four power provinces, whichever marketing slogan you want to use. They, you know, over the last couple of years, they've produced a number of exciting backs who all have plateaued. I think McFarlane did an excellent job stabilising Ulster when he first came in. We all remember Brian O'Driscoll describing him as a basket case. It was in the wake of the trial, which was hugely damaging. I think they'd lost a lot of public goodwill. And within months, he was competing out here for, you know, within Jacob Stockdale putting the ball down and Ross Byrne's late kick of beating Leinster, the reigning champions, in a European game, and got to semi-finals and finals, and it just grew stale. And I think Jarrod Payne moving on was damaging. And overall, I think he did a good job for 3 years. Possibly should have got out while the going was good. Stayed on for another couple of years, signed a new deal. But last year was difficult. It was poor. They never really hit the levels they'd hit against Munster in that URC quarterfinal when they blitzed Johan van Graan's team in their last game. And this season's been really awful. Now, I was across the road a couple of weeks ago when they beat Leinster. So it turns out that was a dead cat bounce. But like, they were good that night, and they have good players. And you know, they've got Dave McCann. I think McNabney's a good player. They have some talent coming through. But Ireland should be looking at James Hume, Mike Lowry, Robert Balakoon as contenders. None of them are in the Ireland squad right now. And that speaks volumes for how they've plateaued under this coaching ticket and just need a fresh voice. So Murphy goes in there, has earned that right, but I think he might need an experienced voice with him as well, as either a DOR or something like that. And, you know, look, Foster's just a name being thrown out at the moment, but he's the kind of calibre of candidate. Like Razzie Erasmus at Munster in 2016, this job needs a big personality, because Ulster needs to start pulling its weight.
Yeah, it's hard to disagree with any of that. I suppose on a human level, it's sad to see someone lose their job. Particularly, it's unusual for Irish rugby during a season. I know Rassi and left during
Matt
the season.
O'Connor really is
Matt O'Connor, Rassi was obviously different circumstances. But I don't know. We only get to deal with, I suppose, Dan McFarland a few times a season, and I don't know what he's like behind the scenes with the players. But publicly, he always felt like he had the weight of the world on his shoulders. He was quite chippy in his dealings with the media and things like that. So I don't know how that's reflected behind the scenes in the players. There's a lot of, you know, the discontent that you've been hearing about. There's no smoke without fire. Like, something I'd been hearing was that, you know, there was no one sort of part of his coaching staff who were able to not stand up to him, but maybe to challenge different things that he was doing, that everyone was just kind of under. Now, of course, the head coach or director of rugby, whatever you want to say, should be have the final say, but maybe he needed another voice in there. Maybe that was the Jarrod Payne or Dwayne Peel when they were there, and they never really replaced them, you'd have to say, on the coaching ticket. So look, Ulster is an attractive club to go to. It's going to be very interesting to see who is on the shortlist. I mean, you look at the stadium. I know there's a few issues. There's talks of up to 10 players possibly leaving at the end of the season, which is tricky. So obviously they've got budgetary issues there. Are they going to be able to strengthen the squad? But generally speaking, it's a good club. It's run well. They do have a good academy system. They have started producing more young players in the last couple of years in terms of the Irish 20s and things like that. But you're right, Rudd. They need to be doing a hell of a lot more. Not having any Ulster players in an Ireland squad is pretty damning for the province as a whole.
Yeah, no, for sure. So Ireland against Wales here at the Aviva Stadium, 2:15 on Saturday. Scotland against England at Murrayfield at 4:45 on Sunday. And France against Italy then on Sunday. Sorry, England against Scotland at Murrayfield at 4:45 on Saturday. By the end of the weekend, will it be England also still going for that Grand Slam for round four?
I don't think so. I think Scotland at home will be the stronger proposition. I think they've had the upper hand in this fixture for the last couple of years. They're kicking the ball a bit too much for my liking. Scotland, they kick the ball more than anyone else in the tournament. And while Russell has a great boot and they're bringing Blair Kinghorn back this week, I would like to see them, like, they have got great running threats out wide. I'd like to see them play a little bit more. But they'll find the holes that Italy and Wales found, and they'll find them with, and they'll be able to finish their chances much, much better, I think, than those two teams. So I think Scotland I think it'll be a tight game. I don't think it'll be easy by any means. And England could get a result quite conceivably, but I think Scotland can get a result and keep their hopes alive.
Yeah, Blair Kinghorn being back is huge, I think, for him. Yeah. I mean, his move to Toulouse, he's looked brilliant. In Toulouse in the Champions Cup. He's really fitted in there well. We sat here in these exact same seats a couple of weeks ago, and I said that I couldn't wait for the rugby that was going to be on the following day, and it was absolutely atrocious.
Terrible.
But this England-Scotland game on paper looks like it should be a cracker. I find it very tough to call, actually. Maybe home advantage, like Rudd said, might tip it in Scotland's favour. Like I said, Kinghorn back. I think they have a better... Gregor Townsend's record against England as a coach is very good. They've got an excellent attack. And like I said, when you're bringing a player like Kinghorn back into it, they might be able to expose that rush defence that, you know, Italy weren't able to in the opening round. So, yeah, I just hope that it's not a damn squib as it was a couple of weeks ago.
We won't get to see it anyway, Keane. We'll be in here doing press conferences.
we're going to be under the thumb to try and get this out as quickly as possible so we can watch it. But whatever the opposite to Super Saturday the last time, what that was. So I'm more optimistic for, what would I say?
Calcutta Cup.
Yeah, a Supreme Saturday maybe this weekend.
Jesus.
Terrible. With that, are we done? I think we're done here. I think that is finished.
Does anyone think Italy could beat France?
If it was in Italy, maybe.
That's been awful.
Yeah, I know,
but
England, like Italy came within 3 points of England. And while what I was impressed by here a couple of weeks ago was that the fact that they stayed in the game for 80 minutes and France have gone so far back to the pack. They were so poor in Murrayfield. I mean, it's two more weeks. They look like a really unhappy camp, and they've just spent two more weeks together. So does that revive them, or does that make them even worse? I don't think they're going to beat them, but I think they could scare them. And if they get up ahead of steam, isn't Tuilagi going to be playing?
Yeah,
you know,
I think
starting?
Tuilagi
is not mobile enough for me at this level. Like, they brought on players the last time who didn't look conditioned enough. I just don't know what has happened. Like, France looked like the team of 10 years ago rather than the team of the last couple of years. I'm not saying they're going to lose, but I think Italy could give them a scare.
Oh, I think I heard you saying Italy are going to be France.
I think you did.
Your teener.
Yeah. It's Supreme Saturday, so. And I know what we'll be cutting out and putting on YouTube.
Oh my God, that's terrible. Right, that is it from us. We will be back with another podcast after the game on Saturday, so we'll chat to you then.